Social impact everywhere.
Hi, everyone, and welcome back. Today, we have another special guest with us, and we have a very interesting background, but we have Lawrence Buchan with us, and he is the co-founder and director of operations, and actually now the CEO of Arbutus Medical. I'm going to let him explain what that is, but it's a really cool background, and this is the first medical startup, medical company that we've had on the podcast, so really excited to learn about that. But I wanted to start first with saying, Lawrence, thank you for taking time today to be on the show with me.
Thanks for having me, Avery. I really appreciate it.
So I'd love to jump into the first question. And what it is really just an introduction about you. And it's, you know, who you are, what you do, and really why you believe you're a social impactor.
Yeah, happy to explain. So I started my career as a biomedical engineer studying orthopedic research. And in that, in those studies, I came across a fantastic problem to try and solve with orthopedic surgeons, both in Uganda and here in Vancouver. That was to develop a radically affordable orthopedic power tool system for surgeons. The problem with medical equipment in general is that it's really, really expensive. Particular to our problem, if you break your leg, if you've ever had a fracture of any kind of bone, and you need surgery to fix it, what surgeons will do is drill holes in bone and apply plates and screws to fit it back together. It's really similar to carpentry, just a little finer. And so in that first step, surgeons have to drill holes, and they use power tools just like the ones that you would find at home in your garage, DeWalt power tools, except with the one difference being that they're made with a stainless steel case that can be sterilized for infection control. The problem is that those power tools, the ones that are used in Canada and Canadian hospitals for trauma procedures, cost as much as $30,000. So we had the idea to come up with a sterilizable cover. If you can imagine a dry bag that's made of surgical gown material, the same kind of material that surgeons use to protect themselves, and a fancy mechanical attachment that allows you to use that exact $100 DeWalt drill that you find in your garage at home and put it inside the bag to have a completely sterile power drill that's 30 times more affordable than what's on the market right now.
Wow.
So we developed this solution, received some funding to create our organization, which is a social enterprise called Arbutus Medical, based in Vancouver. And Arbutus Medical's goal is to democratize access to orthopedic surgical equipment for surgeons around the world. We really want safe surgery to be possible for everyone who needs it worldwide.
Wow. That's a daunting task, really, to look at something that large. But I'm impressed that I didn't know that it was $30,000.
Yeah, it's a really expensive, really nice, but really expensive system, a lot of the modern surgical drills that are used. So how we get around that expensive nature of those power tools is really by leveraging the economies of scale of these off-the-shelf power tools. And the way we do that is by our patented drill cover design, which allows you to have a sterile enclosure for those tools. Now, a lot of people are probably thinking, well, it can't be safe to use a hardware tool for surgery. And that's partly true. You can't use any power tool for surgery. You have to be very careful about what types of power and speeds and torques that you're using. The ergonomics of the tools are a really important consideration, and so is electrical safety. you can't have something in an operating theater that will have a lot of interference with other really important equipment like anesthesia machines, for example. So we actually, as part of our business model, sought partnerships with major power tool manufacturers, Stanley Black & Decker, and their DeWalt brand being one of them, to very carefully select a power tool that would form the base of our system, and then take it through rigorous screening processes and extra testing to make sure that it can be safely used for surgery. So our system is actually a fully approved medical device. And really where the magic comes in is that we leverage the economies of scale that they already have through manufacturing to really drive that cost down without compromising quality.
Yeah, you haven't you haven't overloaded yourself with that cost. You're using something that already exists. You're using an entire infrastructure that's there and then just supplementing it, which is...
That's exactly it.
Yeah, which is super, super smart, especially in, as you know, like an entrepreneurial drive. Wow, I'm impressed with that. And that's, it's of course, you're not going to go and just get a drill. I thought that part was absolutely true. But I love that you went out and actually had a medically approved device now and made these partnerships, right? That's really all what it's about, is that team collaboration in the business world.
Yeah, that's exactly it. There's, I guess, there's a old... I think it's a East African proverb. If you want to go fast, go alone. If you want to go far, go together. And we definitely try to internalize that mantra as a company.
Yeah, no, that's a good one, actually. That is true. Yeah, you can't go very far without other people. So the second question I have for you then is, with Arbutus Medical and maybe what you're doing as well, you know, with this vision that you had, how are you making a positive social impact, or just a positive impact in your community?
Yeah, so for us, it's that social impact is really near and dear to our heart and embedded in the DNA of our company. A little known problem in the world is that 5 billion people don't have access to safe surgery, which is a staggering statistic.
That's
almost the whole world. There's a lot of reasons why that's the case. Not enough surgeons, not enough nurses, few ambulances and transportation systems to get patients from rural settings, not enough equipment maintenance, sometimes just flat out too many patients or poor systems for insurance. But access to equipment is a really big one as well. So that's kind of where we come in. And specifically with regards to our focus on orthopedic trauma, particularly fractures and broken bones, there is a huge burden of trauma globally. And in fact, that burden of trauma is actually greater than the burden of HIV, AIDS, tuberculosis, and malaria combined.
Wow.
So when you put those two stats together, burden of trauma being huge and not enough people with access to safe surgery, what you end up with is people getting broken bones, not getting the care they need, and ending up in many cases with lifelong disability that can be easily averted with a simple surgery. And so we're also really advocates for improving access to safe surgery and making safe surgery part of universal healthcare. It should be a basic human right. And it just makes economic sense because it actually, there's been some recent research from the Global Burden of Disease Study and the Lancet Commission on this topic of safe surgery that showed that surgery is actually a really cost-effective intervention from a public health perspective. For some context on the numbers, it costs around $10 to $200 for trauma surgery per disability adjusted life year averted, which is a fancy way of saying, you can think of a disability adjusted life year or daily as a year of healthy life lost. So that's $10 to $200. And the cost for managing HIV AIDS with antiretrovirals is on the order of $900 per disability adjusted life year. So much more.
Wow.
Which is not to say that it's not a good thing to do. It just puts in perspective that it actually makes sense to provide treatment to people who are injured, because you just have to do it once and then they avert lifelong disability. And then you avoid all of this trickle down economics that come from no access to surgery. So if somebody's injured, and especially in many low and middle income countries, the majority of the workforce is involved in some kind of labor. You can't work. If somebody's in some kind of precarious employment where, you know, they're making cash, if they're not working, then they're not earning money.
Mm-hmm.
Then that means they can't pay for their children to go to school. And there's this huge socioeconomic ripple effect just from that one single injury that can be easily averted with a cost-effective surgery. So that's kind of the big picture, how as a community, if we can address this issue of access to safe surgery, there can be a huge amount of social impact. And so our role within that really is, as engineers who can design things, we want to combine these clever ideas to make surgical tools more affordable without really cutting corners, in order to democratize access to this equipment, like I said, so that the surgeons who are out there on the front lines trying to get that number of 5 billion people without access down to less than that, we want to be able to help those groups on the ground actually providing the care. So that's kind of how we approach our impact. And then also, we know that we're just a small part of a really big ecosystem and sort of global movement towards this safe surgery for all mission. So that's why we're out here talking about it and advocating for this as an issue that people should be thinking about in 2019. And we're really proud because we've been able to get, since 2014, when we founded the company, our products out to surgeons with enough equipment to treat. Now, I'll give you the numbers. It's 36,000 patients as of January 2019. And actually, we're seeing that we're able to help veterinarians as well, who also struggle with access to affordable equipment. And we've been able to help 21,000 animal patients. And this year, we're shooting to get the TOBO Global Health number up to 50,000 patients.
Wow. And that's incredible. No, that's an incredible number. And what's less than 6 or 7 years you've brought it up to that many. And the one thing that you said that really struck home for me was that you talked about, you know, trickle down economics, and you talked about, you know, what that ripple effect is. And I mean, even if you look at the larger economic picture as well, when you have people in the workforce, you have less, you know, economic activity, right? And if you have that happening so often, the amount of loss of revenue or loss of GDP for a country is massive, especially if it's a labor intensive workforce, right? So it's in all areas, and it just makes sense that if we treat things proactively rather than reactively, we actually can make more money in the end, but we actually can help people live better lives at the same time. And I think that's kind of what you're doing. And I think that's awesome.
That's exactly it. You really nailed it. Safe surgery just makes good sense from a public health perspective, from the perspective of patients and everybody involved, really.
Yeah, yeah. And you kind of answered this question, but so I'd like to go over it, you know, really briefly, because I really want to get your opinion on the last question. But this one's on the business, and it's, do you believe social impact is an important part of business? And if so, why?
Yeah, well, yes.
Yeah, you kind of already
answered. You probably gathered that from my last answer, but it's really hard to do business, especially with something that's novel, disruptive, and when you're operating in markets that, you know, are traditionally neglected or not prioritized by other big players in the market. For us, it's been, you know, trying to scale a product into emerging markets is difficult. And the only way that you continue fighting is if you have this really bright, shining North Star that you can look towards to say, hey, we have this grand purpose. It's bigger than we are as a business. It's really helping people. And so we can't give up. I think that's sort of high level why it's absolutely critical to integrate social impact into every business. It's just a good thing to do, I guess, in general. So we do believe that it's a critical part of our business. Using business as a force for positive social change is a core part of our B2C DNA. Mm. I can talk a little bit more about, I think it was interesting because we didn't always know that we were going to be a for-profit company. When we first started out, we thought, oh, maybe we should just, make a few of these and get the product out to, the handful of Ugandan hospitals that we were working with in our early stages of R&D. But then we realized that this issue of, really expensive medical equipment affects everybody around the world, that there was also a really interesting business opportunity to pursue a growing value segment in healthcare, which is growing internationally, especially in places like Europe. The NHS, for example, reached out to us and said, hey, why aren't we using this to save costs? And they did a bit of an economic analysis and looked at using our products, and I think found something like they could save close to 90% over a 5-year period in terms of cost of ownership on power tools than what they're paying now. So it was clear to us early on that if we could figure out this equation, we can reach scale worldwide, and that will just help us reach our own economies of scale, make prices more affordable for surgeons in every part of the world, continue to do good. Another aspect I think that's worth talking about too is that other business has potential in, I think, in the international development space, particularly social impact businesses, to really address some of the challenges that are facing sort of humanitarian aid organizations trying to solve big problems. So in particular in our space, we see that in the lowest income countries of the world, most of the equipment, if not all of it, is donated. We actually have a staff member who's based in Lilongwe, Malawi. And so we ran a countrywide assessment of the orthopedic equipment in the public hospitals there and surveyed where it came from. We found that it was over 85% of the equipment is donated. For orthopedics. And so that means that the supply chains are completely different from what we see here in North America. And there's some major challenges with that. There's some research that's shown that a lot of equipment donations aren't done as carefully as they could be. And that results in equipment that breaks down really quickly after it's donated. There's one researcher out of Duke University that surveyed over 100,000 pieces of equipment in low-income countries around the world and found that 40% of the devices surveyed were out of service. And I think over 50% are no longer in service after 1 year of the donation. So
1 year.
And that's not to say that donations are bad. They obviously are having a huge impact themselves in the day-to-day practices for many surgeons around the world. But it's not sustainable. And eventually, in order to continue to improve access to safe equipment, health systems and countries' supply chains need to develop. Hospitals need to develop their own procurement systems. Their technicians need to know what equipment is coming in and out. They need to be empowered to choose what equipment they want to buy. And the reason why that's not happening right now is just because it's so grossly expensive and inaccessible that there's no in between. So that's kind of where we come in the long run, I think, is, you know, if there's more companies making affordable equipment, then those medical device markets will develop along with the health systems. And that's really what surgeons need to do their job effectively, efficiently, and sustainably.
Yeah, no, because I'm surprised by, you know, that's the staggering quickness to how things fall apart, especially through donations too. But that is not a sustainable model, right? If we want equal or equitable, let's say, access to you know, preventative healthcare, you can't have equipment that's falling apart in a year. That sounds more like, and I know it's not necessarily true, but it sounds more like secondhand donation. But what we should be doing is using sustainable models like you're doing, and really being able to give those as frontline really affecting that positive change to healthcare.
Yeah, that's exactly it. And that, you know, donations play a huge role, and I acknowledge that today we're not going to flip a switch and then be able to cut off donations and all of a sudden have a sustainable supply chain. Until that happens, yeah. Donations are sustaining many practices and the reason why so many patients get care and avert lifelong disability right now.
Yeah.
And there are really, really good bridge solutions that are happening. There's some organizations that have published, SHET being one of them, THET, Tropical Health Education Trust, really good guides for humanitarian groups who want to make donations about how to make them in a way that will lead to the greatest chance for success. Mm. So there are good bridge solutions, and I think just as a community, we need to just keep moving towards those sustainable supply chains. And so back to your original question about why is, you know, social impact an important part of your business? Yeah, I think putting it the other way around, I think business is an important part of social impact in this particular case. And I'm sure there's many parallels to other industries as well.
I like that you flipped that. That's true. Yeah. Yeah. Is social impact an important part of it? Yeah. I like that. I do agree with you that it's not as easy as flipping a switch. It never is. You have to make that substantial change over a long period of time. And you also have to have key players, right? That's that ecosystem that's forming, that's creating, and you're supplementing something that is needed right now, but is not necessarily the most sustainable. So no, I think it's awesome that you're being a leader among other people in that space specifically. But I want to jump into the last question. And this last question is about your advice for others. So what is your advice for others to begin making their own impact in their own communities?
The first step is to be passionate about something, pick what you're passionate about, and resolve to make a positive change in the world over the course of your lifetime. I think in today's age, we receive a lot of negative news generally in our day to day. Media typically tends to sensationalize and report on, and oftentimes the worst stories of the day. Mm-hmm. And there's not enough folks like you, Avery, who are telling good stories to people. But in fact, I actually just finished reading a book that I would recommend to everybody called Factfulness, which talks about all this data showing the world is actually getting better every day. And there's plenty of threads to follow for any cause that you're interested in to really double down on positive change that is happening now and figure out ways to accelerate that change. Mm. I think if you adopt the mindset that the world is going to get better and it's your job to have a vision for what it would look like ideally and bring that day closer to today, then that's kind of your starting point. And then secondly, I think it's the theme that we talked about towards the beginning here, which is you need to go with friends. You need to go with partners. You need to do it together as a team. And so I think engaging in your communities early on to really identify the problems that everyone's facing, listen, take time to listen, and take time to think carefully about what you're good at and how you can contribute that asset to the cause, I think is kind of at a high level really how to approach it. So long as your intentions are right and you're humble, then I think you can make a big difference in the world. And lots of people are doing that every day. The world is getting better, the data shows.
Yeah, no, and I couldn't agree with you more. There is this sensationalized, and dramatic view of you know, the problems happening in the world. But one of my favorite articles of 2018 talked about the top 100 good things that happened just in 2018 alone. Yeah. And you know, in the science community, just the amount of things that we've accomplished, you know, as a species, you know, we've sent things into space, we've developed cures to things, we found new data suggesting, you know, this and that, and there are things that, you know, movies were about in the 60s, but it's happening now, and this is real, but completely flooded with other negative things happening. Because again, it's more dramatic, it's more, you know, ooh, that's interesting, but you look at the positive things, it's incredible what we've actually accomplished in just a year or two, which is, to me, baffling that every year we're getting better in so many different ways.
That's exactly it. And I think for everybody listening and for you as well, Avery, read this book, Factfulness. Bill Gates actually is a major fan of this book. It's by Hans Rosling and his daughter and son-in-law, I believe. And you know, what they do is poll a number of people with simple questions about global trends and realize that most people have a worldview that's about 60 years old.
Yeah.
Where things are pretty bleak and there are many problems in the world. There's a vast gap between the developing world and the developed world. And in this book, they really go through and debunk that and show that on just about every metric, especially big picture public health metrics like child mortality and life expectancy, the world is improving on a continuous basis. And there really is not so much as a gap, but a world spectrum that we're pushing towards, you know, more positive outcomes on whatever metric you're looking at. And so I think everybody really should read that book and adopt the idea, what Hans Rosling in this book calls being a possibilist, I think is the term that he used. So not necessarily an optimist, but being pragmatic that progress is happening, and therefore with evidence that progress is happening, it is we have reason to believe that it is possible to continue having progress and possibly even accelerate it depending on the trend of that progress. So this is a really geeky engineering mathy way to talk about graphs and trends and whatnot, but I think the upshot is my advice is be a possibilist, think that you can make change, pick what you're passionate about, and then just go do it and do it with other people.
I like that. Be a possibilist. And and just to make sure that everyone heard that, the book was called Factfulness. That's amazing.
That's right.
Awesome. Lawrence, I want to say thank you so much for being on the podcast with me today. That's all the questions that I have, but it was really interesting getting your perspective on, you know, the space that you're in and really the change that you're making. So, you know, once again, thank you for being with me on the show.
Thanks very much, Avery. It was a pleasure to be here.